Okay. Okay, we're about to begin a new sugya. It is building off of what we spoke about in the previous sugya, namely, although it was a machlokes in the Gemara, but we pask in halacha that a person does not have netmanus to claim that he paid back a chol within this man. Halavayshi for other bismano. We hope that people would pay back chovos at the right time. So we can assume that there is vah that the person did not pay back the chol before this man is over. And therefore, Titus Parati is not going to be acceptable. Now, the Gemara throws in another curveball into the sugya, and that is, how does this play out in terms of what if not all the Bali Dinim are alive anymore? And now we're trying to figure out what happened in the past in terms of the fathers. How does this impact the Uchaz Yorshim? So comes the Gemara, the first of my Makobos, and tells us as follows. So first of all, two of the great, the later Amarai, Rav Papa and Rav Rebbe Yeshua, paskin like Abai and Rava, who disagreed with Resh Lachish, who held that people do pay back chobos within this man, if you put people, who a person would have a tainus parati within this man. But Mar Ravashi, other Kiresh Lachish, but Mar, the son of Ravashi, paskin like Resh Lachish, Vilchas like Resh Lachish, and that's the final word. People do not pay back the chobos, and therefore a person does not have a claim, and if it's considered to be inconceivable, the person may back the chov within this man. But now the Gemara throws the chiddush at us, and this is where Asugi begins. Even if Reuven is now demanding, I want my chov to pay back, chov has not yet been paid back, Reuven is not talking to the lova anymore. Lova is no longer in this world. Reuven is talking to the yesomim of the lova. And Reuven is claiming to the heirs, to the yesomim of the lova, that I'm telling you for certainty that your father did not pay back. How do I know for certainty he didn't pay back? Because it's within this man. So the father died before this man, Hachov, arrived. So Reuven, the Malva, has a right to say to the Bnei Halova, I know with absolute certainty that this Chov was not paid back because we follow Resh Lachish. And comes in and says, V'afagav the Amar, under normal circumstances, if I want to collect money from Yisomim, I have to take a shvua to that effect. Even if I have a shtar, even if I have a document that says that the father owes me money, you never know. Maybe the father paid it back already. So there's a halacha called lo yipar ela b'shvua. It's a mishnah, it's a mesech shvua, it's a mishnah, it's a mesech tzubas. Every time I want to collect money from Yisomim, I must come to Beis Din and take a shvua. Now that shvua is not a shvua deraisa; it's only a shvua derabbanan. Shvua deraisa is only under circumstances when I'm not going to pay. Let's say a marshal, I come to you and I say, "You owe me $100," and you respond, "You only owe me $50." That's exeris akosuv that you have to take a shvua on the 50 that you're denying. So shvuas of Torah is shvuas niftarin. You take a shvua, and that exempts you from paying the rest. Well, let's say, for example, I say to you, I gave you an animal to watch. Where is it? And you claim it was hit by lightning. So you want to be niftar. You want to exempt yourself from paying. So then the Torah says, shvua sashem tiyah ben shneim. You have to take a shvua to exempt you. Well, let's say I come to you and I say, you owe me $100. And you deny it. And I bring an eid echad. I bring one witness who says you owe me $100. So there's a dimin haTorah. You have to take a shvua to potter yourself to negate the testimony of the Erecha. Those are the only three cases in the Torah of Shavuos. Shavuos v'ydiv mikta, Shavuos ha-shovim, and Shavuos Erechot. The common denominator is they're all called Shavuos ha-niftarim. They're all Shavuos that exempt you from money. But when you want to collect money, that concept of taking a Shavua and collecting money, that is not a concept in the Torah, that's a concept in the Rabbanan. So one of the shvuas and note that we have is a bali bar mixi yisayim. If you want to collect money from yisayim, so you have to take a shvua. So comes the Gemara and says that shvua that's normally incumbent upon the malva to take before he gets a penny from the yisayim, that shvua would not apply if it's still within this man. Because what is the rationale for that shvua? Why do we institute that shvua in the first place? Because maybe the yisayim pay back the chob already. So maybe the father paid back the chov already. Since the father may have paid back the chov, We don't really know. The Yisomim don't know. Therefore, we're going to make the Malva take a Shavua. So comes the Gemara and concludes that that concern maybe the Malva pay back, the Lova pay back the Chov, that only makes sense when it's after the Zman HaPiron. If it's within the Zman HaPiron, it is absurd to be concerned maybe pay back the Chov. Maybe pay back the Chov. That's what Rish Lakish said. Halavai Shifra Adam Mizmanon. And since there's no concern that the Lova pay back the Chov before he died, because his man hasn't come yet, therefore there's no need for a Shavua. So basically, the Gemara puts a lot of teeth into the statement. The Rish Lakish's statement is so powerful, so strong, that there's no concern, zero concern, that the Chov was paid back before the Zman. Not only must the Lova himself pay back, but the B'nai HaLova have to pay back as well. And that's what the Gemara says. We have to be a Haboli Parvus is only part of Yeshua. The Chazak below Avin Ish Parvus goes in Nay. There is a Chazak, a Gemur, an absolute proof positive that he did not pay back. So let's just take a step back in this halacha. Let's forget about our case for a minute. Forget about the scenario of it's within the Zman. What about a regular Malva Lofi Yisomim? Just the ABCs, in order to appreciate this Gemara, what are the regular standard halachas of the following case? Ruvain has a chov against Shimon, which is about $1,000 from Ruvain. Even though Zion does not idea. So Ruvain lends Shimon $1,000. And now Ruvain comes to Shimon and he says, okay, this man comes. I want to be reimbursed. So Shimon says, I paid you back already. What kind of response is that? I paid you back already. What do those words mean? I paid you back. Is he believed to say that he paid you back? So here the Gemara differentiates between a milva b'shtar in contrast to a milva b'al peh. If Ruvain doesn't have a document in his hands, he just says, I paid you, I lent you money $1,000 last year. And even if he has edim to that effect, and Shimon is not even denying that he borrowed the money, Shimon is just simply saying, I paid you back. So now it's Ruvain's word against Shimon's word. So what's the halacha when Reuven has a claim? I claim you owe me $1,000. And you claim I did, but I don't anymore because I paid you back. So it's Reuven's word against Shimon's word. So we say, Hamotzeh b'chaver l'varaya. So Shimon is totally and completely potter. Shimon does not have to pay a penny. Let Reuven prove that he didn't pay it back. So Shimon is potter. Min haTorah, Shimon is not only potter from Tashlumin, Shimon is even potter from taking a Shavua, because this is what's called the Kofer HaKol. One who denies the entire claim, and Kofar HaKol min haTorah is potter from Shavua. The Rabbanon, much, much later on, the days of the Amoraim, days of Rav Nachman, they instituted a Shavua, the Rabbanon called Shavuos Heses, which means that although min haTorah, Kofar HaKol is potter from Shavua, but with the Rabbanon, we insist that you take a Shavua, we're afraid that maybe you're lying. But min haTorah, there's no concern, min haTorah, it's my word against yours, and min haTorah, you have no response claim whatsoever. However, This is all true when I don't have a shtar. I don't have a document against you. But what if I have a document against you? So now there's a new factor here. Factor is called shtarcha biyadi my boi. I, the Malva, can turn around to the Leiva and I can say, wait a second, you paid me back the chov. Really? Why don't you take the document back? Why didn't you demand a receipt? So how are you talking that you pay back the chov and I still have the shtar in my hand? Shtar, get my boy. The fact that I am holding on to the shtar in my hand, that's a proof positive that you, in fact, never pay me back in the first place. That's the din. That whenever I have a shtar, the only way for you to prove that you pay back the chov, either you have to take the shtar back, rip it up, or you have to produce edim who testified that you paid back, or you have to be able to produce a shaver, a receipt, signed by me, signed by Adam that I authorized that you pay back the chov. Otherwise, shtar chabiyadi medboi. So the starting point is, there's never a Titus parati on a shtar chabiyadi medboi. So comes the Gemara at the second of the Mamakomos and has the following line. So, Omer HaPapa, and Shavu is that b'malaf and alaf. Omer HaPapa, Hayman da afik shtar al chavre. If I'm made to a shtar against you, the Omer le shtar paruahu. And you respond by saying the shtar is pur, the shtar is paid back. Amrina lay, we say to you, lav kol kaminach, said, you have no ability to make such a statement. Zil shlim, you better go pay. Why? Shtar chabiyad my boy. But now, what if you, the Lobem, respond in the following? The Im Amar Lishtavili, what if you, the Lobem, say, listen, I know I'm about to lose this Din Torah. I got it. I understand. I'm about to lose the Din Torah, but I still claiming, the Lobem is still claiming that he paid back the Chov. So he has a right to turn around to the Malb and say, I demand that you take a Shvua to that effect, that you would not pay back the Chov. The Amali Nishtabali, Amin Nishtabali, comes up and says, if the Lobem so insists, so desires that the Malba take a Shrua that he was not paid back, that is a valid claim, valid response that the Lobem has, and we are going to force the Malba to take such a Shrua. Now, we're not going to introduce the Shrua. We're not going to volunteer our opinion about the Shrua. If the Lobem never alerts Shrua stuff from Malba, he doesn't know that he has that secret weapon to insist on the Shrua, we're not going to tell him. There's no reason for us to insist on the Shrua because the Midas Adin dictates, that the Malba probably, most probably, is in fact justified, is in fact correct. After all, he does have the Shtar in his hand. So we're not going to go turn the world upside down to tell the Malba to take such a Shrua. But if the Lobem so demands, then we have to respect that demand and we're going to make him take that Shrua. So that's the starting point of everything we're about to talk about right now. We have to just, before we talk about complicated cases of Yisomim, we have to make sure we have the ABCs of regular Malbas and Lobem. So there are basically three halachas that govern Tainus Parati after this Bar. Forget about within this Bar for a minute. After this Bar, it's ready, 10 years after the Chov is already due. And the Malba claims he was never reimbursed, and the Lobem claims that he paid back already. So what are the basic we did him? So if it's a Milva Be'al Peh, then the Lobem is believed outright. If it's a Koyfra Kol, and finished. If it's a milva bishtar, then the basic halacha is the malva has the upper hand. But the third halacha is if the lova so demands a shvua, he has a right to do so, and then we will insist that the malva takes the shvua and then collects his money. So with all of that in the background, now let's go to the sugya's mishnah. So here the Gemara is referencing a mishnah that appears in Masechta Shvuos and Masechta Subas. Any and every time I want to collect money from Yisomim, I must take a Shvua. So here we come to a Din Torah. I come with a Shtar. I come with a Shtar to the Yisomim. I say, listen, the Shtar says, this Chov was due last year. Your father died last week. It says, here's the Shtar. Here's the document. I'm telling you, you guys owe me the money. What is the Yisomim's response? So the Yisomim's response is, we have no idea. We find out told us what was going on. We don't know. So comes the Mishnah and says, so you're going to win the Din Torah. You have a shtar. It's a shtar of my body. So my left kamina, whether you're coming with a claim against the father himself, you're coming with a claim against the assignment. At the end of the day, there's no question you are going to win this Din Torah. But comes the Mishnah and says, yes, you're going to win this Din Torah, but you have to take a shvua. Lo yipar ela b'shvua. So the question is, where did this shvua come from? What is the background? What is the source of this shvua? What is this all about? So we know that it's a Mishnah. It's a Mishnah Maseches Ksubis, but we're not quite sure where it came from. So comes Rashi. I'm trying to see whether I put the Rashi on the Marmakom. For some reason, the Rashi got lost in the Marmakomos. That had been my mistake. So I'll disagree with the Rashi. I'll quote the Rashi about that. So when the Mishnah says that Habali Par Menichsi Yisomim Lo Yipar Al Mishvua, where did this come from? What's the source? What's the basis of this halacha that we're going to require the Malva to take a Shvua if he has a Shtar? Says Rashi, it's based on one very, very simple concept. The concept is called, we'll see in a moment, not so simple at all. The concept is called Ta'aninon. Ta'aninon is the sugya that actually appears in a few places in Shas. It appears later on, the third Bekel of Abbasar appears in a few places. Ta'aninon means we are Toein. Who are we Toein for? We, the Bezim, we, the Rabbanim, we're going to represent the claims of people who otherwise cannot represent themselves. Who are such people who can't represent themselves? Yisomim. Yisomim are one of the groups of people who we say Taninan for because they justifiably don't really know the facts. A person passes away, he doesn't tell his children what his business dealings were. They're trying to sort out the doctors and sort out what's going on. They have no idea. They have no idea whether the father paid back the chov, didn't pay back the chov, they don't have any access to anything. And therefore, they're really in a pickle. So there's a special halacha called ta'aninan, ta'aninan li'asaymin, that the Mishnah of Abbasar tells us that that any claim that the father could have claimed, we are going to claim on behalf of the Yisoyimim. That's the parash of Tanina. So normally when you have it in Torah, the Dayanim are not lawyers. The two Balei Dinim are supposed to present the claim. The Reuven puts forth his claim. Shimon puts forth his claim. And now the Dayanim have to figure out who has the upper hand in terms of the times. That's how every din Torah works. But every once in a while, the Beis Din almost wear two hats. Not only will they wear the hat of Dayanim, but they will also wear the hat, in a sense, of lawyers. They're going to come to the defense of the people who otherwise don't have access to their own defense, i.e. Simon. So Rashi says, if you want to know where did this Mishnah come from, that Avali Param Nichsi Yisaymle Pal B'Shvua, it's a Mishnah in Ksubis, a Mishnah in Shvuas. Why is that true? So Rashi says it's very, very simple. It's based on the second of the Maimonides. It's based on the Gemara Shvuas we just read. If the father, namely the Loiv, if the father would have been alive, he would have had a right to claim, I pay back and swear that I didn't pay back. That's what Rapopo just said, that even though the Malva has a shtar, and in terms of basic demonos, the Malva has the upper hand, shtar chaviyadi my boy, the Malva will be able to collect his money based on shtar chaviyadi my boy, but afa pichein, if the Loiv chooses, the Lova insists, he can force the Malva to take a shvua that he wasn't paid back. So comes Rashi and says, just as if the Lova would have been alive, he could force the Malva to take such a shvua, so too, if the Lova is not alive, Taninan kicks in, whatever the Lova could have said, any claim, anything the Lova could have requested from us in Beis Din, we will do on his behalf, on behalf of the Yisomim, and therefore we will insist on the Malva taking such a shvua. So according to Rashi, the shvua of the Mishnah, the shvuas hamalva, in the case of a Bali Parm Nichsi Yisayimim, is really just an extension of the Gemara in Shvuas Tachnanah, the second of Mamakom, it's Rapapa. Just as the Lova himself can make such a claim, so too, we're going to make such a claim on behalf of the Pnei over the Yashim. That's the parish, that's the sugya of Ta'aninu. So that's how the sugya plays out according to Rashi. So comes Tosfos and says, it can't be. Take a look at the fourth of the Mamakomos. Oh, sorry. So Tosfos actually does quote, he doesn't quote Rashi by name. He quotes the sheet of Rashi. That's why I get confused. But Tosfos, at the beginning of the fourth of the Mamakomos, says, Vim Tomar, Tikshlam Estisa, Boli Pom Nichsi, Yisoli Pom Bishvua, V'tayim Mishum Duma, Yav Avu and Kayim, Havetoyim Gav Ishvili, Abba Matzi Mashri Vilei, Umiyan Nira. That's referencing Rashi. Umiyu says Tosfos Mira, the Taima Lav Mishum Hachihu. Says Tosfos, if you want to know why is there a sugya, why is there a mishnah that says that we force the Malva to take a shvua before he collects from Yisomim, that's not based on what we just said. It's nothing to do with Tanina. Why? The Afila Lo Motzi Avun Ton Tanina Liasme. The Beperek HaKosev Amina and Kosov Ishto Noki Nadde Noki Shvua Losi Parmine Sam El Bishvua. So Tosfos makes reference to Gemara Maseches Ksubas. With the Gemara Ksubas, the Mishnah and the Gemara Ksubas applies the principle of Abali Parm and Ichsi Yisamim Loyipar El Bishvua to a Ksuba as well. A Ksuba is basically a Chow. It's not alone, but it's a Chow. The couple gets married, so the Chosim signs off on this document saying that if and when he dies, the divorces are, so he's going to pay her X amount of money. So comes the Mishnah Ksubas and says, what if Reuven wrote the Shtar Ksubas, he's obligated, but he writes it not, doesn't matter, he's obligated to pay this Ksubas to his wife. Then many years later, so Reuven passes away. So now the wife, Rachel, she comes to the Bnei Reuven, she comes to the Yarshim of Reuven, and she says, I'm demanding my ksuba. Here's my shtar. I want to collect my ksuba. So Mishnah says, fine, no problem. You have a shtar. You're entitled to get your money. But, abali para, minichzi yisaymim, lo yipara ela bishrua. So the Mishnah says that the same way that if you want to collect from a lova, from the nichzi ha yisomim of a lova, lo yipara ela bishrua, the same is true by a ksuba. That the woman wants to collect from the nichzei ha'yisayimim, in case when the husband died, so lo yipar lo sipar lo b'shvua, she has to take a shvua as well. So comes the Mishnah, the Gemara Maseches Ksubas, and discusses two situations. Let's go backtrack for a second. It's back to the time of the Ksuba. I'm sorry, back to the time of the Chuppah. So Reuven and Rachel, they're about to get married, they're signing up the Ksuba, everyone's wonderful, everyone's in a great mood. And someone actually reads what it says, the Ksuba, and it says that if and when Reuven dies, not a very cheery document, but if and when Reuven dies, or divorces are, so he's going to pay our 200 zuz, and add it to Seft, whatever else, he adds on to the Ksuba. He's going to pay the Ksuba, fine. So she's getting a little hemming and hawing over here. You know, she's saying that, wait a second, yeah, it's true that I'm going to be able to collect my ksuba at some point. But again, this is not the most beautiful discussion that should be taking place right before the chuppah. But she's thinking dollars and cents, thinking, yeah, okay, I'm going to be able to get my ksuba sometime. But it's going to be such a pain in the neck, such a hassle for me to collect my ksuba, because every time I'm going to come in the future to collect my ksuba, so the husband's going to claim, no, I paid it already. No, again, he's going to claim that he paid it already. It's not going to help much. She has the upper hand. She's going to have the document. But she knows, she doesn't think about ksuba in truth. So she says, yeah, it's true. He's going to have the upper hand, but he's going to make me take shvuos to that effect. I'm going to have to swear that I didn't pay back. He's going to make it so much red tape before I get the ksuba. It's really, really going to be problematic. So he feels very bad. He says, you know what? He cares about her so much. He wants to make life easy for her. He wants to make life easy for her. So he says, listen, noki neder, noki shvua. He says, yeah. You don't have to take any shrooms. You'll have the right to collect the shrooms amount. He signs up a document saying, I forego by my rights of insistence to take a shruva. You'll be able to collect the shrooms no matter what. You just pop at the basin one day, hear the shruva, and you're going to get paid. He promises, I'm not going to make any problems for you. So he's moved out there on his chus to claim a shruva. Now, normally, the husband has a right to claim a shruva. The verse says, in shruva, stop the malab. But the husband has a right to say, you know, yes, I'll pay you at the end. You have a document, but I insist you take a shvua. So if the husband is meichel, he's mevater, and that's chus, whatever chus he wants mevater on. So be it. So she has proof that he was meichel, and that's chus. So she's going to be able to collect later on without a shvua. So comes the Gemara in Ksubas and says, it doesn't matter what the husband wrote. That writing of the husband is true if she wants to collect the ksuba from the husband. But if she wants to collect the ksuba from the Yorsha, the husband's not here anymore. So she's coming with a dim Torah against the Yorshim. End of discussion. That he could write documents and mechilas and mevata from today till Adias Goel. And Gornish Gelfin, it's not going to help him. It's not going to help her. But she wants to get money from the Yisraimim. She must take a shvua. So comes Tosus and Shvua says, wait a second. If Rashi is right, that the whole din of Habali Par Menichsi Yisayimim Leipal B'Shvua is all based on Taninon, whatever claim that the husband had, whatever claim the father had, so we're going to claim on their behalf because they're innocent. They don't know. They have no idea what's going on. So we're going to step up to the plate to claim on their behalf, says Tosus. We're going to say Taninon. When are we going to step up to the plate to claim on behalf of the Yisraelim what the father could have claimed when the father could have claimed it? And if the father couldn't have claimed it, then the game's over. And obviously there's no Tanina. Tanina means whatever the father could do, we're gonna push forward on behalf of the Yisraelim. So Estosis, in the case where the father was Mavater, the father was Meichler, and the father knocked out that ability to take a Shavua, how could he turn around and say, Habali Pah B'nechsi Yisraelim, Pah L'Bi Shavua? So Tosh said, the only answer to this question is, go back to the fourth of the Ramah Kamas. Obviously, Rashi's presentation is not correct. The real answer at the end of the fourth line, in the fourth of the Ramah Kamas, Alma, Avud Rabbanan Takanta Liyasmei, Afila B'mokam She'ena Av Yochel Hashbiya. Says Tosh, there was a special Takonas Chachamim called Habal Yipara V'dich Si'isayimim Lo Yipara Ela B'shvur. It was a Takonas Chachamim, there's no nothing to do with Tanina, nothing to do with the father's ability. Even Zosayim, the father didn't have such ability. There's a freestanding din called Habal Yipar Menich Siyasayim Lo Yipar El Bishvua, and it has nothing at all to do with the world of Tanina. So we have now a major machlokes Rashi and Tosfos now developing for us what is pshat in this halacha of Habal Yipar Menich Siyasayim Lo Yipar El Bishvua. So let's just backtrack how we got into this din in the first place. We're really learning by the Basa of Hey. We're learning the sugya of Ein Adam Pareya Techzmano, that people do not pay back chayvus within this man. It's inconceivable that people should pay back chayvus within this man. And the Gemara said, it is so inconceivable, it is so unlikely that the person pay back the chayvus within this man, that will trump the halacha of Abol Lipoim Nichsi Yisrael Lipoim B'Shvua. Normally, you want to get money from Yisraelim, you must take a Shvua for whatever reason. We don't know yet what that reason is, Rashi Tosfos. Whatever the reason, normally Abol Lipoim Nichsi Yisrael Lipoim B'Shvua. But if the father died within this man, then that halacha is trumped because ain't other Peretach's man. But if not for that, if not in that scenario of Meis B'Sech's man, in a regular case, so the din of the Mishnah stands. It stands at Bali Pognes and Bali Bishua. So we raise the question, it stands based on what? What is the source? What is the rationale for this Chayt Layav, for this rule that appears in the Mishnah, in Ksubis and in Shuas, Bali Pognes and Ksubis, Bali Bishua? What is it based on? So Rashi connected this to the Sugya of Taninon. And Taisa said, well, if it's connected to Taninon, so then how could it work in a case where the father himself couldn't get it? How could the kids be more chamach, the kids have more b'schus, than the father himself was mevater on? So what is the answer to Tosfos' question against Rashi? How did Rashi pull off this idea and saying it's taninan, 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 but Rashi knew, the Mishnah, the Gemara Ksubis, that it works even when the father himself was already mevater in that schus. So comes your Bachanan and attempts to explain, this machleg is Rashi and Tosfos, but a fundamental yesod about what the very essence of the sugya of Taninan is all about. Taninan is the sugya that can hopefully keep on coming back to us as we move Mitzvah Shem to the third Pekel of Basra in a little while. Sugya of Taninan, this idea that's a Mishnah in the third Pekel of Basra, and sugya is in several places in Shas called Taninan, that it's a very, very strange thing that the Baal Din, the original Baal Din, is no longer alive. He's no longer here. So he can't claim it. And we're going to step up to the plate and speak on behalf of the assignment. So it's a very strange thing because usually when you have a din Torah, so everything hinges, everything revolves around the two Bali din. So Reuven says his claims and Shimon says his claims. So here Reuven's got a peckle of claims. He's got a shtar, he's got a chavis, he's got a million claims against who? Who is the other Bali din? So the other Baal Din is a little bit tricky because the other Baal Din, the other person who should have been the other Baal Din, is no longer alive. So he's not the other Baal Din. So he's not going to tie into things anymore. He's a source of Dovis Bekever. He's not, you can say Divrei Torah Bekever, but he's not responding in days of Bekever. So obviously Shimon, the father, is not here. He's not the Baal Din. So who is the Baal Din? Baal Din of the assignment. But the Baal Din doesn't know anything. What could have spot Baal Din? How do you have this bizarre, this monthly case where the Baal Din is standing there? And he's has a puzzled face. He has no idea what to respond. So what's the Baal Din? So who is the Baal Din here exactly? Who is responding to Reuben's claims? So Shimon's not responding because he's dead. The Yisraelim are not responding because they don't know anything. So all of a sudden, comes the din from Tanina. Comes the Mishnah and interprets the Baal says the parish is a sugya called Tanina. So what does that mean, Tanina? So who is the Baal Din? So one can understand Tanina in one of two ways. Either one can understand that we the Beis Din are speaking on behalf of the father. The father's dead. You're right. Normally you don't have dinner against dead people, but every once in a while you do. And here we are making believe, we are putting the words into the father. So it's the father who's basically the responder of the claim. The father can't physically speak, we're going to speak on his behalf. Or maybe no, that's not what Taninan is. Taninan is not speaking on behalf of the father. The father's in the other embassy. He doesn't care about the $1,000 anymore. The Baalei Din are the Yisraelim. The Yisraelim don't know anything. They can't open up their mouths. We open up our mouths for them. We are speaking on behalf of the Yisraelim. So comes to Bukhan and says, there's a long tishah b'chalakis. We're going to see this is going to Hashem, permeate the whole series of very, very important sugyas in the Basra about when we invoke the parasha from the sugya from Taninan, who are we representing? Is the Beis Din speaking on behalf of somebody? Who is the Baal Din here? Is the Baal Din the father, the dead father, or is the Baal Din the live Yisraelim who don't know anything? Neither one of them can become the Baal Din on their own two feet. One's dead and one doesn't know anything. So we have to help somebody. Who are we helping out? So that's going to become a loaded question in terms both of them and Ash Sugya, in terms of other Sugya as well. So that's Hashem on next week. So we'll continue with this question as to what the nature of Taninan is, which is going to shed some light on this major machlekes Rashi and Taisus, which ultimately goes back, relates back to Sugya, how to understand this passion, this Sugya of Abol Yipoim Nichsi Yisraelim, Lo Yipoim Ela B'Shvua. Okay, take care, be well, good Shabbos. Good Shabbos, everyone. Okay, everyone, thank you. Just roll, enjoy.